Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Welcome to a very special edition of We Are Women. My name is Sonia Cahill, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Janine Vosper, the founder of We Are Women. Janine is a published author and director of her own coaching business called Speech Perfect. Having worked for more than 20 years as general manager of sales for a multi-million dollar national first aid supplies business, Janine has plenty of hands-on experience coaching high-performing, commission-based sales teams. During her extensive sales career, she has worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs, sales reps, and business owners, helping them to speak their message with confidence and to come across as an authority in their field. Janine is passionate about empowering women to provide them with a confident voice and the words they need to enable them to speak their message with credibility and conviction. A voice so they can confidently sell their ideas and have the know-how to speak with influence in front of any audience. She does this through keynote speaking, workshops, and one-on-one coaching, as well as the We Are Women Mastermind Meetup group, and of course, this podcast. And speaking from personal experience, Janine really knows her stuff. Janine, welcome to We Are Women.
Thank you very much, Sonia. This feels sort of that's my job normally to do the welcome. This is going to be fun. I know that I'm going to really enjoy sitting here answering the questions rather than peppering people with questions.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it too. So firstly, I'd love to know a little background about We Are Women. What inspired you to start it?
I've had my coaching business for quite a number of years, part-time and more on a full-time basis. And what I've seen is that a lot of women, there's a lot of barriers to women's success that have just kept popping up, the same ones popping up all of the time. And in particular, there was working in isolation. We often, I'm going to use the collective we as women, we often don't ask for help when we need it. And we feel that we need to be able to be competent and capable of doing everything ourselves. And there's so many other women out there. If we gave them the opportunity to be able to assist us, they would be able, they'd be happy to do so. So the point of the, particularly of the podcast, is getting and having conversations with women who are fairly expert in a particular field. And for those that have been listening, know that it's been very diverse, you know. Your interview was the first one, which was a wordsmith and editor. We've had financial advice and even dating and sex advice too for those that have listened to those ones, but fashion and just a whole range of topics that when you're working by yourself, you just don't have the expertise in every field. So I started this because I want women to be able to know that they've got somewhere they can go to get some advice on different topics. And it's not just through me, it's then once they've connected with somebody or it's resonated with one of the interviews, then they can follow up and make a connection with that expert as well.
Excellent. It's a great initiative and we really do enjoy it.
Thank you.
So I guess from an overarching perspective, why are you so passionate about empowering women? Women in business in particular?
Look, I believe that every woman possesses the ability and has the right to speak up and speak out when necessary, especially when it comes to promoting their own business and their expertise. And what a lot of women don't realize is that when they start in a new business, particularly because this is my expertise, is that they are in sales. And without the funds to support their business, to employ a salesperson, that they need to become the expert. So getting that voice of confidence in being able to do that. I just want to digress a little bit on another reason that I just feel it is so critical for women to be able to speak their message. One of the things that really started me on my journey is this is a passion was I was at my longest, dearest friend's mother's funeral. And this lady, I called her Auntie, and Auntie Shirley was just this amazing woman. And I was sitting on the pews, and the minister, she'd worked at this church for many years, but they just changed the ministers, so he didn't know her. Her husband had just died a couple of months before, so everyone spoke at his funeral, and they were so shocked about her death that nobody could speak. And I sat in those pews going, come on, somebody's got to say what an amazing woman this is. Somebody's got to stand up and do it. And I swore at that moment that I would never be without a voice again. And I know this happens to so many people, that they get caught without that voice, without that ability to say what they want to be able to say when they want to say it. So this has been, you know, one of my driving passions, to be able to enable women in particular, although I do work with quite a few men, to be able to, when you need to say something and you want to say something, that you can.
I love that. It's so much more than just purely making a sale. There's actual real purpose, life purpose behind your goal and your passion.
Yeah. And those sort of things just drive me. And my greatest joy is when I see my clients succeeding in what they're doing, whether that they can articulate their pitch well, and they feel so joyous when they do. And I had a beautiful term yesterday, which just fits into what I love about the whole being authentic in sales and authentic in your story, is that you love and respect yourself in doing so. And that's what I like to get across to women, that how you can sell, how you can get your message across and still love and respect yourself in the process.
That's lovely. I can see that as a quotable.
It's certainly my quotable now. I've worded it out. Yes. It was just perfect. When I heard it, I went, that's me. That's absolutely perfect. Yeah.
Great. So over the years, you've coached many women and some men.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In terms of both sales and then public speaking skills, particularly impromptu skills,
mm-hmm.
for the women, though, what problems do you see they face?
It depends on the age group of the women. I'll say that, and then I'll clarify, because it doesn't really. I know that sounds a little bit contradictory. A lot of women have grown up with that thought through childhood, you know, to be seen and not heard. And that, you know, that's more of a past sort of parenting process. And so when it comes to promoting ourselves, and especially in Australia, we have this tall poppy sort of thought process where, goodness me, I can't possibly go out and promote myself, promote my business, tell people how wonderful it is, because they're going to see me as a fake or a phony, or, you know, who does she think she is to be able to do that? So that is an overriding factor. And I thought it was more so with the more senior generation. But what I come across, because I also coach a lot of younger women, and women who have got degrees, they've, you know, had to go either in university or had to go through university. So they're very smart women who find it really difficult to stand up for themselves and be articulate in their message as well, you know, and be really clear about it. And yeah, that it's disappointing that there's just so much of that around. And going to networking events with entrepreneurial women, you're sort of seeing a side of most women where they look pretty confident, but when you start talking to them, there's actually a lot more going on than you see on the outside.
Interesting. So how do you improve your public speaking skills then?
Well, the first part is you have to do it.
Ooh.
I had a conversation with a lady this morning at a breakfast meeting, and that's what we were talking about, was just practicing it. And there's a whole lot of techniques, of course, that you can be clear in your voice. You can use modulation in the way you present. You can use gesture, confidence, stance, a whole lot of, and also using different technical equipment, how you do all that well. And when you're looking at a speaker, we automatically judge or connect with the speakers doing that. But the most important thing, first of all, is to believe that you can and then go and do it, even if you can't. And I was going to say fake it till you make it. I'm not a real fan of that term, because we don't want to fake confidence. We want to feel confident even when we're not, and then still go and do it. I've had so many people come through without, they're just quite terrified. And the courses I run, I do warn everyone they've got to leave their comfort zone outside the door and really push people out of their comfort zone. And that's one of the greatest ways and quickest ways to become a good speaker, is to really step out of your comfort zone and do things that you would never, ever do in public, but you can do it in the confines of a training course. And then you feel a little bit more comfortable in what you're doing. And then, you practice it. And you practice it. And you practice it. And every time you get a little bit better.
I love your, I guess, background story in some way, shape and form, in that the reason that you started to get interested in public speaking, particularly impromptu speaking, was your friend's funeral or your friend's mother's funeral. Mm. And that's a situation that I'm sure many, many, many people have been in, where you're lost for words and it would be great to actually get up and say something, both in personal situations and in professional situations. So I think that's a really powerful incentive for us to all learn to speak up with confidence.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So last year you published a book called Good Girls Do Sell.
I did. I didn't know I could write. And I didn't know I could write that many words, but it all fell together and became a book.
Excellent. So what inspired you to write The Modern Businesswoman's Guide to Authentic Selling?
I was challenged. And for those who do know me personally, know that if anyone throws a good challenge at me, then I do take it up. I was challenged to write a book, 30,000 words in 30 days. And I was given the opportunity to write a 2,000-word summary of what the book was going to be. And so I had the chapters titled out, and then I was given this 30 days to write it. And the 30 days I was challenged to write it, I was actually traveling overseas. I was in Norway enjoying the Northern Lights and having a ball. So I knew that I'd have to write it before I went. So I wrote it in 12 half days.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know I could do that, but I did. Look, a lot of it is a lot of the training information that I use. So there was the training courses there. Obviously, that's quite different than how a book is written, but it was just so much fun. And I disciplined, so I'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd write. It was over a Christmas period, and I would write until lunchtime, and then I'd stop for the day, and then, you know, go and socialize, play in the pool, do all of that sort of thing, and to get up the next day and do some more writing, pick it up again. So it meant that you could actually clear it out of your head as well, but you could be focused during the time that you – that's how I work, is I allocate time for things, I get it done, and then don't try and do too much, because it just – that would wipe you out. So then it took 12 days to write and 12 months to – get it edited, get it published, and get it out there. So it was just so exciting. And I love it now when I get people come back to me and go, oh, I've read your book. And it's quite dog-eared, because you've read it too, Sonia, haven't you?
Yes.
So the first part is really easy writing. It's just me having a conversation, really. But then there's a whole lot of resource material in it. So I've got people that show me. They've been carrying it around in their handbags, and they refer back to it when they go, oh, that's that. And they check it off and highlight it. So love it.
I love how you say you don't want to overschedule yourself, but you managed to write a book in 12 days.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I know. So, can I tell you something funny the other day? I was at the We Are Women Mastermind group and I was doing a little session on goal setting, and there was something that just slipped my mind. So I grabbed my book to look at it, and one of the ladies just burst out laughing. She said, "I can't believe you're referencing your own book as you're doing the training." And I hadn't thought about it. That is cool. I felt great. Did feel good. That
quoting
someone
yourself.
Noticed.
That's
quoting
brilliant.
Myself. Yes. Yes. That was good. Yeah.
So many women in business are interested in building their profile, which you've done through publishing a book. How do you become a professional speaker and published author?
You don't sit on your hands and wait for it to come to you.
So action, that would be a tip.
Oh, that would be absolutely taking action. It depends on your market. Now, and as to what you would do to gain the publicity in your field. So the people that I work with, solopreneurs mostly women, they attend networking events. And so it makes a lot of sense for me to turn up at networking events. But it makes a lot more sense when I speak at networking events, because then I'm seen as the authority on a particular subject. And I get the opportunity to share lots of good information, but also speak about what I'm doing and what's coming up and how people can join me in the different workshops to improve their skills. So that's definitely been an asset in gaining that publicity, is to be able to speak in front of people. The course, the podcast, and you know, all the social media things that you're constantly doing. And my greatest advocates are the people who've done my courses and come through private coaching. I'll be at a networking event and, you know, I'll have half a dozen people stand up and go, "You got to do Janine's stuff. You just loved it." And so I just sit down then and just let them do the selling for me. And the book is a fabulous business card. It really is, you know, of course, you've written a book. Well, you must be an expert on that subject.
Excellent. So going back to the book, though, writing is one thing, and you did mention that you hadn't appreciated that you could write before publishing a book. Podcasting, though, is an entirely different medium. What inspired you to start a podcast, and how do you even start a podcast?
It was really interesting. I don't know. It just sounded like a good idea at the time. I just know so many people who've got some great advice and great ideas, and I wanted an opportunity for them to share it with other people. And so that was a big driver behind it. I was very fortunate for the first 13 episodes. I had a studio that I could use, and we'd get a lot of interviews done in the one day, and that worked out extremely well. What it's taught me is, other than learning incredible amount of information from these people and upskilling myself by listening to them speak and their great ideas, it's made me a heaps better listener as well when I stay focused on what people are saying, because you certainly don't want to lose attention when somebody's telling you a story and not come back to it. So there's been some really good win-wins for me as well.
How many episodes have you recorded now?
About 20.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, and we've got over 1,000 downloads, which is
fantastic.
Really cool. Yeah. And it's fun. And, you know, I really want to encourage people. And that's something I speak on, you know, just let people know, because it's free. Listen to it. All different ideas. Some things will resonate. It's a beautiful story about a lady who escaped domestic violence from Syria, and you know, people talking about mindset and publicity and getting bums on seats as well, you know, a whole lot of range of subjects. So.
Brilliant. I love the fact it's got such a broad scope.
I know, and a lot of the podcasts are very focused, you know, on a particular market. But because we are solopreneurs, and there's a whole lot of things that will be of interest to some and not so much to others, I try and keep them as conversations as well, that we take away some skill base, but we also, it's a conversation. And it also, in case you haven't figured out, it's a length of a workout or an hour's walk.
Perfect.
Yes.
So back to your background in sales.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps this is just from my personal experience. Sales brings up a lot of icky conversations with clients, and well, many women have that icky feeling towards having those conversations with potential clients and existing mm-hmm. clients, mm-hmm. especially for women who are new to business.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you give them for managing those feelings and those conversations?
The first bit of advice, don't try and sell anything. Now, that sounds really – we want people to buy. We want to be in business, and we want people to come and buy from us. But, gosh, I'd feel icky if I was trying to sell something to somebody. There's lots of ways to have a sales conversation that are a lot more comfortable. And when I first started working in sales, look, the first job I had was in a cut price store, which for those that are much younger than I, just imagine it's like a little tiny local IGA type of supermarket, but it used to be a very busy, busy place. And what I learned just from that was that we had lots of regular customers that would come in. And you, even at 17, you're building relationships with those customers. And then throughout my career, I taught aerobics for 10 years. And that was probably my hardest sell of any time, was to get people to put their shoes on.
Oh, really?
Once they got their joggers on, they may as well turn up at the gym anyway and do the class anyway. But that was – so that was getting people then to, again, to buy – my idea of fitness and to buy into my classes and to, so you became friends with the people that would turn up, you know, the people that were in your class, and you gave them the purpose to be there. So instead of getting paid a set amount for aerobics class in the 80s, I would get paid commission on the amount of people that I had in the room. So I ended up earning a lot more than the average instructors because I'd get people to buy into my class, basically. And I sold gymware then, and this is before Lorna Jane days. Actually, Lorna Jane sort of started out about the same time. I found this wonderful designer, leotard designer in Logan City, and I would go and set up a display of these, a stunning leotard. Think Jane Fonda, but, you know, much more classy than that. Beautiful Israeli lycras and stunning fabrics. And I'd set up a display across the floor at a gym and take orders. A month later, I'd come back and I'd sell about $2,000 or $3,000 worth of gymware on a night. And again, it wasn't selling. I would just keep turning up. I'd build relationships with these people. They knew that I was coming back every time. They knew that the product was going to be exactly what they wanted and it would be stunning and they'd feel really special. I'd make sure that two people from the same place didn't buy the same lycra because they wouldn't want to. You know, so you didn't go with the purpose of selling, you just looked after the people and all of the things I've done since. And so the point of that is that, again, it's you're not selling, you're building relationships with people so that they know what you've got to offer and that they will come to you. Now, especially in 2017, if we want to buy anything, what do? We open up the laptop or the iPad and we go online. If we go looking for something, whether it's training or something tangible, we'll go buy it. So we particularly don't like being sold to. And that's where that icky feeling comes from that most people have, because that's what that perception is when you get the phone call and it just there's that silence for about 20 seconds and you go, right, and you've already put your walls up because you know that someone on the other end is going to try and sell you something. So we hold that icky feeling. It's our own story. And that's the part that's really – that needs to be overcome. Two things. Our story that we take to every sales conversation, because we make it a selling conversation as opposed to a what you can offer. So I had the lady conversation this morning. She told me she had digital business cards. And I missed what she was saying. It was a very cool idea, actually. I'm going to have a further conversation with her because I want one. But we were talking about how she could say it, and it was more to do with instead of having to carry around and get business cards printed, what I do is ensure that your information won't just get thrown in the bin when you get somebody gets home. They'll actually have it in their phones to keep for, to keep. So you can see that's a different conversation than I sell business digital business cards. So it's figuring out what's in it for somebody. And then if your focus is 100% of the time, what's in it for the person that I'm having the conversation with, what's in it for them, what's in it for them, well, I can't feel icky for that. Most people won't feel icky because it, I love that term, by the way, icky. Thank you for giving me that.
Pleasure, anytime. Yeah.
But you won't feel like that because how can I help? You know, this is a women particularly what we want to do. How can I help? How can I help? How can I help? And if our focus is out helping, it'll come back as a sale.
So be more about what problem you can solve.
Yes.
As opposed to what can I sell?
Yes. And most people, and I call it horse and cart marketing or horse and cart selling, is 90% of the people put the cart before the horse. So you feel like you're pushing it uphill all the time. You talk about your benefits and features as opposed to getting a message pulling along. You look at, for example, McDonald's ad. They'll have the whole family sitting around enjoying the McDonald's, the mum's eating the salad, the kids have got the little thing to play with. So it creates a picture of, oh, it's a whole family day out and we don't have to have rubbish food. We can have good food and everyone in the happy family's happy with what they've got. So they're putting it out there as what's in it for the family. Now, that's just by creating that picture. But then they'll tell you that it's, you know, only $2.50 and all of the features with it. And the benefits of eating there, it's quick. What, but it's that what's in it for the horse that pulls that story of all those features along. And most people just talk about what they do and what they offer. And they miss that, the story, creating that story.
Great advice. So through your coaching, is that something that you actually help with, creating that story?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this has even got more so since I've been doing the podcast, is finding everyone's individual story. I particularly work with a lot of women who are doing multi-level marketing, and there are so many brilliant products out there now, and the whole perception of MLMs has changed from the Amway. And we can't get that out of our head, can we? You know, that's that holds on to that negative. But I know so many women have got amazing products that they believe in and that they just absolutely love. But what sets one Isagenix person apart from another Isagenix person? You know, why would we connect with one and not the other? And that's part of sometimes somebody's story as well. How can I make a business of this because I'm the same as everybody else? And we start to do a little bit more of a dig in of a story. And I met a lady the other night and I was having just a car park conversation, and she told me that she had 13,000 followers on TripAdvisor.
Wow.
Now, I didn't even know you could have followers on TripAdvisor, but she's got 13,000. So then we started talking about her story, which was so different than any other Isagenix person, because she's particularly is Isagenix because she loves to travel. And she loves to be fit and healthy and well. She loves to take things, the easy, simple food with her, know that she's going to be well nourished. And that's one of the reasons that she does it. So can you imagine what sort of story we could create for that for her? So she's not just here, I'm here to sell a healthy lifestyle. Yeah, big deal. We've all heard that before.
Quite often it is the MLM people who come across and as a potential consumer, give me that icky feeling, going back to icky.
Yeah.
That's an interesting perspective, the travel one.
Yeah. I still don't know you can have fans on TripAdvisor, but she was just, because she contributes to TripAdvisor comments all the time, so she gets all these people following her advice on holidays. Mm. So, and a lot of that, and it's just getting to know people, but knowing how to seed the idea so that it's a soft sell through a conversation as well, not a hard sell. Because what other people miss out is they don't tell anybody. Go, oh, I didn't, you know, They'll be talking to someone. They say, "Oh, I've just joined up with a particular MLM." "Oh, I do that. I've been talking to you for 3 years. How come you didn't join up with me?" "Never knew you did it." And that's something else I hear a lot as well. So be open. I love it when someone says, "Hey, you know, I'm with Nu Skin," or whatever they are with. Great. I know who you are now. And at least you have pride in what you're doing rather than trying to hide it behind something as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you've got to tell people what you do, but not sell it to them.
So just going back to the concept of using TripAdvisor, for example, that's obviously a great example of diversifying away from the big three social media platforms as such. What's your take on social media, and what's your favorite platform for business?
I work across all of the social media sites, and I really want to encourage people that social media is a fabulous place for people to get to know you, but it's rarely a place where people will buy from you because it's not that platform really, unless they're in your group. So if you've got a group page, that's where you've got your fans anyway. So if you're running a course, have got a product, then there's a good chance that they will jump on it, they'll support you, they'll share the information. And so Facebook, encourage people, definitely have a business page. You can put some business stuff on your private page as long as it's not really trying to sell stuff. It's just, but again, it's that, "Hey, I'm traveling to," use a travel lady, "I'm traveling to hiking around Mount Blanc, and I've taken all my isogenic product with me to make sure that I stay fit," you know, that sort of thing. And have a business page as well as a group page if you've got a, particularly if you're a trainer. I use Twitter, but everything's automated on Twitter for me because it's just not my space. And I like Pinterest because it's got Instagram because it's got pretty pictures. And I think you just got to be out there.
From a professional perspective, do you use LinkedIn much?
Oh, sorry, I forgot LinkedIn. Yes, I've got a really large group of people that I connect with on LinkedIn. And because I write blogs weekly, then I've got an avenue to, other than to put the blogs on my website, I then put them back to LinkedIn and on Facebook Business as well. And I think that's what people are after, is that value. You know, it's nice looking at the pictures on things, but if you've got a good blog or some good information, I think that's a great way to let people get to know you as well.
Good advice. I've seen a really great example of a post you had on LinkedIn that drew me in so much I couldn't not click through to your website.
Oh, I love that. What did I do?
the way you, I guess, use that draw card and the call to action to go through to your website for the rest of the blog was really, really well done.
Oh, thank you
and,
for that.
And so it's worth checking out the style that you've started. And it's changed over time, but in recent times the style that you're using I think is really engaging.
Yeah, thank you. And I don't like reading lots and lots of words. That's just a personal thing for me. I glaze over a bit and skim through things. So I've started that particular. If you didn't read any further, you still got good information, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's a lot more, and just dot points to follow through. And I think that especially when the people that I work with, there's so much information coming from so many different angles all the time that you go, what will I do? Will I take this up first? Or, and especially if you're working as well as trying to develop your own personal, your own business, that you're being, your time is really precious, and knowing where to put you, where to keep your focus. So yeah, hence those posts are valuable information, and then dot points. And then I've been flicking in these reminders as well to remember to do this, this, and this. So yeah. And just if it's, that's just the three things you do that week, then it will definitely assist your business.
Excellent. So you're clearly efficient and highly productive. particularly just on social media alone.
Do you want to ask my husband about that, whether the word is productive? You know, did it say productive? What was the other word?
Efficient.
Efficient. Yeah, no, he'd say those ones as well. Yeah, he would. I used to use the word controlling for myself, and I had a conversation this morning. I don't use that one anymore. I'm disciplined.
Disciplined. That's a great phrase too. Mm. So what's your secret to success? Is it discipline?
For me, it is. That works extremely well with me. I like to be super disciplined and super organized so I can be flexible. That just means that if I've already got it done, then if somebody says, can we meet for a coffee or can we do something else? Because you know me, I love all the social stuff as well. And I can go, sure, because it's done. And I know I don't hold on to that feeling of that I should be doing something else. And that actually, that's a really good point too. I think it's Eckhart Tolle's book about being in the now, the power of the now. And that is a very important space to be, so that we're not feeling overwhelmed. That if someone says, hey, do you want to come for coffee? And you go for coffee, that you're there with that person having coffee. You're not thinking I should be doing other work, whether it is done or not. And for me, I prefer that it is done. If it's not, I still let it go and be in that moment. And it means that you can clear so much clutter out of your head that you aren't continually thinking, what have I got to do? What have I got to do? And I used to think everyone did this, but I realized that they don't. I have a little filing system in my head where I can put that each lot of work in, and if I need to grab something out, I open it up and work on it and get thoughts and ideas, and I close it up again, and then so I'm not constantly thinking everything. I sleep well. It's a blessing. I'm absolutely blessed that I can do that, it makes life very, very easy. And it means that you can get so much done, because when you sleep well, you wake up rested and you're feeling that you can take on the world and you can be more productive. That's a bit of a cycle, isn't it? I just realized that.
And for those who don't have that filing cabinet in their mind, Evernote's a great tool for recording as well.
I know. I have a couple of friends that have been telling me that for a long time, and yes, it is. And look, that's a really important factor, Sonia, is that find the things that make life easier for you. I had big discussions this week about getting virtual assistants doing particular jobs. I'd have to figure out what I could hand over. Figure that out. But if you want somebody else to do something, then it's very nice for us to be good at everything, but we're not. Most of us are really highly performing at certain tasks, and other things we just hate. Bookkeeping, for example. So you find some, rather than struggling, and IT stuff with things fail, that just drives me crazy. And I could waste hours trying to fix something, or else I'll just pay someone else to do it. And I've really realized that now. That's where that control thing's left go. Okay, I don't have to know how to do that. I'll get an idea, and I'd like to be a little bit over it so that I don't sound really dumb when it comes to IT things, but I don't have to do it. I'll get somebody else to do that for me.
And IT and bookkeeping in particular are great things to outsource.
Yes. I think they are for most people. So that's one thing, you know, and using the right tools like Evernote or whatever your tool is. I'm going to track down some information on Asana as well. Mm. I thought that would be fabulous for setting up all of my workshops and meaning that I can have everything done once, and it creates all the templates as well. That's something that I will, you know, move on to. That'll save me a lot of time in the future. Set up time initially, then. Finding those things for yourself, but being in the now. I think that's the critical thing. Is if you whatever you're doing that. And that, there's something else that when we're constantly going over in our head about what we have to do, it means that we're actually doing it each time. And if we're telling other people, oh my gosh, I've got to get the, you know, I've got to, apart from the laundry, picking up the kids, I've got to get the business done, you know, and it is, that becomes exhausting. And each time we tell the story in our head or aloud, we are doing it. So instead of having done the job once, we've done it four or five times before we get there. So
what are your favorite tools at the moment then?
The tools for software and things like that.
Yeah, business tools in general.
I don't know. That was a very professional answer, wasn't it? Well, for my recordings, I use Pamela and Skype, which 90% of the time works well. Didn't the other day because the IT deficit person didn't know, press the wrong button. But
any favorites?
No, nothing in particular. No, I'm progressing into some more of those tools just again to take time off me. It's just that initial setup with everything.
Yes. And when you start a new program like Asana, for example, when you open it, it's blank and it's setting it up so that it actually works for you and your project or your business and whatever else. And some of these projects, some of these programs are fantastic for collaboration, working with other team members as well. So perhaps that's, Asana's a really good one for you when you've got your virtual assistant.
That's the plan. Yes. That will work well. And I just had VAs to set up automatic emails and that type of thing as well. But they're all things that I wrote. They're all value emails as well with the blogs on them, the short blogs and training information. So, but again, outsource that because it was just another job that I could spend hours trying to figure out and get someone else to do it.
It's not your zone of genius.
No, certainly not. And that is something else. You know, I've said this about three times, that it just, we don't have to be. I just admit it. We've got strengths and weaknesses and just go with the strengths and really hone those.
Yeah. So one area I do know that you are quite an expert in is the knack of having difficult conversations with clients. Mm-hmm. You've helped me through a couple of my own conversations and it's actually led to outstanding results. So thank you very much for that.
You're most welcome.
What are your top tips for approaching difficult conversations with clients?
First of all, I would say identify that they need to happen. There's always three solutions to every problem. And one is that you move away from it. One is that you move towards it, and the other one, or confront it, and the other one is you change your response to it, your attitude. And I know that when we were talking about, there was two components in there, was changing your attitude towards it as feeling deserving, that you were entitled to what you needed, and then you move towards it without being confronting as well. So having a conversation about how to get what you want. Oh, by the way, this doesn't always work with children or husbands.
Okay.
Actually, it works with children a lot of the time, but it doesn't work with husbands that often. And it does until they realize that you're doing it. I'm just trying to think of how you actually word things, because each case is very, very different, but you pre-frame things. So if you're having a conversation with your boss, and you're still working for somebody, and you want to get, you know, somebody else is earning more money than you are, you've found out, and they're doing the same role, you think you're actually doing it better than them. And it's so difficult for women to have this conversation, more so than men. My sons just go and ask for more money without a problem because they figure I deserve it. And so do we, but it's that feeling of confrontation. So to be able to go in and you pre-frame something is to say, for example, to your boss is, I and this is a very difficult conversation with me, but I know you will appreciate how important it is to me to feel like I'm valued in this workplace. So can you see how you're pre-framing? All right, you've just told him you better value you, and done it in a way that he can't deny it. I know how important it is for you to value that you value the work that I do. So rather than saying, "Hey, I do good work," you're putting it back onto him to recognize that. Oh, okay, yep. And so you want people nodding, you want people agreeing with you. And, you know, it is difficult for me to do this, but, you know, I realize that I'm letting myself down and you in the end result because I haven't been open enough to ask for the money that I feel that I'm entitled to. So you see, it's not quite pushy. Hey, I want more money because they're getting it. Yeah, and I know that you do value others in the workplace because you've been able to reward them with that, and I just think that for me to be able to feel great about coming in every day, that this is a conversation that we really need to have, and just wondering where we can go from here.
I love that approach because it's full of fact.
Mm.
And there's really no way that, for that particular example, I guess, there's no way that the boss could deny what you've said.
Mm. Yeah.
It's powerful.
Yeah, and there's lots of things around that. So it's that pre-framing. And that's the same in the sales conversation. If somebody's looking at, doing public speaking and they've said that, oh, I'm so nervous about doing this, and that's just the same thing, So you'd go up and you'd have a conversation with them about, I can see how, the nerves are really affecting you being able to speak about your business. Yeah, you've got them nodding. Definitely. The nerves are affecting me speaking about my business. It's how you can assist them is putting it in a sentence that is undeniable.
Mm. Excellent. Undeniable. Fantastic. So I've heard you mention the horse and cart today,
mm-hmm.
and not putting the cart before the horse. Another term I've heard you mention through workshops and at networking events is the elephant.
Mm.
What can you tell us about the elephant
in the room? The elephant in our room is the story we take into as a sales conversation. We all have stories. We have stories about everything. And some of them really affect the way that we do business because they hold us back from us reaching our potential. They're things that we've brought with us, whether it's from childhood or from other interactions. And often the elephant in the room in this reference is the story that you take into a conversation with a prospective person about why they won't buy from you. Well, I'm too expensive. I don't have the experience. I'm too old. I'm too young. They don't know about this idea. It's something that people haven't heard. Whatever it is, I guarantee it. Every single one of us takes at least one of those stories into a sales conversation. And so while we're sitting there waiting for the elephant to jump out at us, I can't deal with you because you're way too young. Or, no, hang on, you're talking about, buying a face cream and you're 112. I know people that have said, well, they won't buy from me because I'm too old, or I don't have the experience. That one comes up a lot. So you pre-frame it. It's the same as that conversation that we had before. That means there's reasons people won't buy from you, and it's usually that they don't see value in what you offer yet. It's got very little to do with your cost or your age or your experience. They don't see the value in what you want, and they don't trust you yet. Occasionally, they just don't need your product. If you're not going skiing, you won't need snow boots. So usually, though, they don't trust you and they don't see value, and there's ways that you need to, and that's what we talked about earlier about building relationships to build that trust, but seeing the value in what you offer as well. So if you're thinking that people don't it's the experience. You ask questions. This is the important factor when you're in a sales conversation. You stop talking, you zip it up, other than asking questions. And so if you're an IT person, but you've only just come out in business for yourself, you'd be thinking, they won't deal with me. They want to deal with one of the big names. And you take that into the sales conversation. But you ask the person about what, so if when you're looking for your IT, what's important to you? Is it important that you do deal with a big name, or is there something else that's your criteria? You ask them. But you do it in a way that's not going to flag a red flag for them, if you know what I mean. You do it and then you would pre-frame it into something like, some of the people I've worked with in the past, their first impression was, my gosh, that person is so young. Are they any good at what they do? But it wasn't long before, once we got into the real technical stuff, then we had the conversation, they realized that I was really capable, and then we finished the project and they were really happy with it. So you pre-frame it. And then all of a sudden, that elephant's gone because it's not a problem anymore, or the cost one. So, yeah, that's the elephant in the room, and I guarantee we'll all have it. I do a whole workshop just on that. It's good.
Excellent. So what other workshops do you offer, and what can we gain from these workshops?
Look, confidence in communication, probably right across the board, is the biggest one, and how to be able to have the conversations. Throughout the year, I run half day courses on having, and I call it 5 keys of authentic selling. It's all about being authentic in the process, how to overcome our negative mindset, how to work within our own values, so that you'd love and respect yourself in the process. How to build and own that own personal power, how to engage with others as well and recognize where people are coming from and step into their frame of the world, how to attract clients and how to attract people into your world. I've got a couple of topics and profiling that I love to work with that are simple as anything that most people have never heard of, but they're so effective in understanding where people are making decisions from. And also like to make sure that we, you know, follow up and do that horrible thing that everyone hates and follow up. So that's the half day, or that's a half day or a 2-day workshop, depending on what you want and where you're sitting with that. Obviously the 2 days, much more intensive. I only do that with 4 to 6 clients at a time, and we totally unpack their business and do a step-by-step on every bit of component, whether it's mindset or marketing, what they need to do to take away. So they've got a huge – then we do an action plan at the course, so we put the whole action plan into place. They go out and take that away with them. That's over the 2 days. And also professional presenting workshops. I do have a calendar on my website, which is speechperfect.com.au, and that calendar then links up to Eventbrite, so all of those workshops are on there.
Excellent. So for those who are not fans of the communal nature of workshops,
mm-hmm.
What do you tend to work with for one-on-one clients?
I like one-on-one, working with people one-on-one. I've had a lady recently who was going for some interviews at the university, and she missed out on them, and we're working on her communication style as well. So that was a bit not the normal sort of thing, but it just fit in really nicely with what I do. So yes, I do one-on-one coaching sessions as well.
Excellent. Just going back to the workshops for a moment, do you have online courses, or are you working towards those?
Oh, that's a secret, Sonia. No, they're coming. They're coming. I'm working on 1st of July launch for them, and I'm holding myself to that. But it will be called Be Real Authentic Sales Training. Oh, I shared that then, didn't I? I was going to hide that as a secret, but it will be coming, and it will be me talking through each of the components of the sales experience.
Well, there's the scoop. We heard it first here on We Are Women.
Certainly did. If I can't share it on my show, well, then there we go. It's fun being the interviewee.
That's great. I love extracting secrets.
I just realized I talk a lot more as the interviewee, obviously, as well.
So another element of We Are Women is the mastermind group that you've recently started, which is on Meetup, I believe.
It is on Meetup. It's for people in for people all over Brisbane and Logan and Gold Coast coming to it. It's once a month. It's at Upper Macrobat. So if you're living in Brisbane, then it's local. And it's a couple of hours where women get together and they get some training and they get to mastermind their business as well. So any problems that they're having, they get in a small group that we swap around each meeting and they get a chance to share them and get incredible feedback. I've been blown away with the amount of feedback and help and assistance. And we've only just started this year and I've seen people just completely changing the way they're approaching everything. It's been fantastic.
Wow, that's great. So the concept of a mastermind, though, what's the value?
The value of masterminding is, again, back to that whole sort of process. You're not doing it yourself. So it's not just – and it's not just your ideas, because – that you're getting the input from others and you're building up a very, because I keep the numbers to 20. So it's a very small community and people are getting to know each other's businesses well. So they've got, and they get a bit of skin in the game in other people's businesses and they like to see them succeed. So they give some great advice.
Brilliant. Mm. So before we finish off on your top tips for women, as a mother of two, grandmother of two, a third on the way who loves to travel, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
In 5 years, I actually probably will be doing much I'm doing now. Again, lots of travel. I like to fit in at least one overseas travel trip every year. But I love doing what I'm doing and I love helping the people the way I am and sharing information and just getting more and more people through workshops so that more and more people have, you know, that confidence and ability to go out and speak for themselves.
Brilliant. Your top tips?
All right, very quickly, because I know I'm on the timer here too, because normally this is me controlling the time. All right, three takeaway top tips. Whenever you're presenting yourself, get really clear on what you offer. We've got so many skills, but we want to be clear on only just share one idea at a time. Focus on the what's in it for your client and make sure you always put the horse, so the story before the benefits. And that means we're doing pulling selling, not pushing selling. So we're pulling people towards us. And give yourself a break. If you miss a call, a sale, just treat it as a learning experience. And don't take it personally. It's just something, oh, well, that didn't work out. Next time I'll do better. That didn't work out. Next time I'll do better. And get help. Don't work in isolation.
And that's where the masterminds come in.
It is. And even just through this as well, getting, you know, advice and ideas.
Brilliant. Where can we learn more?
Again, the website, speechperfect.com.au. And calendar, and hey, if you want a keynote speaker, give me a call too.
Fantastic. We look forward to that. Thank you so much for your time today, Janine. We've learned so much about you, your business, and the reason behind this podcast and the rest of your programs. It's been fantastic. Thanks for having a chat.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for the interview, Sonia. This has been fun being on the other side of the chair.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, I will. Loved it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.